I'm going to continue with this aspect of case studies, looking at how to provide solutions to growers by increasing water use efficiency through management. And I have to confess up front that much of what I'm going to talk about is actually based in common sense, that many of the peanut growers in the southeastern region know that it's a good idea to hold off irrigating the crop early in the season, that somehow it benefits the crop, but they don't really understand exactly why. What I am going to talk about today that's unique and I think fairly exciting is that we've been able to assemble an interdisciplinary team to really study the physiological mechanisms behind this acclimation response to understand why the crop benefits from early season drought stress. So peanuts are grown in the southern swath of the U.S., and although this seems like a very small region, it actually differs quite dramatically in climate, from the southeastern region being very wet and humid, all the way to the southwest being a very arid climate. So the peanut crop itself, it varies based on these climatic conditions. And when you add into that in the southwestern region, many of the aquifer resources are depleting at an alarming rate, you've set up kind of a perfect storm for looking at drought stress in the peanut crop. So our team is working within the western Texas region, where the Ogallala Aquifer is the primary resource for irrigation there, and it is due to be depleted in 30 to 50 years because of these irrigation withdrawals and the municipal withdrawals, many of the things that we've heard about before. And so the option for peanut growers is very small, one of them being increasing the water use efficiency of the crop through breeding. But of course, this is a long-term solution, anywhere from 8 to 10 years. So what we wanted to do was to try to come up with a short-term solution that growers could use by looking at whether we could manage water stress, crop water stress, and actually manipulate the way that it performs by exposing it to drought stress at certain developmental stages. The way we did that was to set up an experiment, a full-scale experiment on a crop, on a grower's scale. So we were working in a quarter section pivot. And we were looking at the factorial interaction between irrigation amounts in 50%, 75%, and 100% irrigation in combination with applying those rates at different developmental stages, both early season, mid-season, and late season. So that gave us a combination of 15 different irrigation treatments that we were looking at. But today, what I'm going to concentrate are basically five. First of all, our 100% control, where the crop received 100% irrigation throughout the season. And then two deficit irrigation treatments, 175% and 150% throughout the season. And then concentrating on two early drought season treatments, one receiving 75%, the other receiving 50% in the early season, and then 100% throughout the rest of the season. Now, to get these irrigation treatments, what we ended up doing was actually go in and re-nozzle the pivot itself so that we could maintain the coverage of each nozzle, but by pulsing those nozzles, we could change the irrigation application. The actual decision to irrigate was left to the grower, so whenever he felt that he needed to irrigate, then that was when those treatments were applied. But I need to remind you that in this system, the belief is that you turn that system on before you plant the crop, somewhere between 2 weeks to a week before you plant it, and you leave it on and it runs continuously throughout the growing season because of these arid conditions. So they are convinced that they have to run that irrigation system throughout the year, throughout the growing season. Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of a flip-flop talk today and start with the end point. Basically, the idea is that if it doesn't improve the yield of the situation, then it's never going to be applicable, never will be available to the grower. What we found in 2005, looking at the green bars, which show the yield, of course, as expected, our 100% treatment showed our maximum yields, but many of our irrigation treatments, deficit irrigation treatments, actually showed some maintenance of yield. And in the case of our early drought stress treatments down here, we actually were able to increase the maturity of the crop, which is important in this region. Also, when you apply the economics of the system, how much money it costs to run that pivot irrigation system as often as they do, you're looking at a difference of only $25 an acre. So for those growers that didn't have full irrigation capacity, which is increasing daily, fewer and fewer growers have full irrigation capacity, this was a possible solution. The yield aspects in 2006 were even more promising. Many of our deficit irrigation treatments, and specifically our early drought stress treatments, showed at least a maintenance of yield, and in one case, in this instance, an increase in the numerical yield. So it looked like we had some possible solutions. Well, why was it that these treatments, through applying less water, were actually still working in this system? What we wanted to do was to try and explore those aspects from the ground up. So starting in the soils, we took very detailed measurements of the soil moisture content along with soil temperature at three depths. And this shows you a profile of, across the season, of that soil moisture at those three depths, 24 inches, 16 inches, and 8 inches. And in this case, we're actually looking at soil tension. So above this 80 line indicates we're in a moisture deficit situation, and below that line we have adequate moisture. So you can see that as we progress through the season, we begin to build up a moisture deficit at several of the depths. We actually ended up with a rain event approximately for 3 inches over approximately 2 weeks. So we filled up the profile again, but then as we continue through the season, we begin to build up that moisture deficit. So how are we maintaining soil moisture in our deficit irrigation treatments? Well, as expected, our 75% treatment across the season, we begin to see more significant moisture deficits build up in the profile. And this is even more exacerbated in the 50% treatment, where, again, we begin to see quite high moisture deficits build up at these different depths. But when you compare an early drought stress treatment, our 75% and then 100% across the season, we're doing a very good job of maintaining soil moisture, very similar to our 100% treatment. So we're maintaining our soil moisture profile using early drought stress. Well, if we are changing the moisture profile within the soil, we know that we are definitely affecting the root system. So to look at this very closely, we installed many rhizotrons, and we not only wanted to understand the differences in rooting depth, but we also wanted to look at the development of the root system across the row. So we ended up installing rhizotrons in the row center, 4 inches off of center, and then in the furrow. So I'm going to show you a series of graphs which illustrate what happened to the root system across the season. So this is a depiction of basically the section of soil from 0 to 1 meter depth in both the 100% and the 50%. Each of these colors represents root length, differences in root length from 0, which is basically this background color, all the way up to 30 millimeters in each frame. And so this shows you our baseline image, where we basically have no roots. This is before the crop is actually planted. But as you can see, by June, when the crop has become established and is growing to a large size, we have a dramatic difference between the 100% treatment and the 50%. Most notably, we have a much deeper root system in the 50%. We also have a proliferation of roots within the 40 to 60 centimeter range, which is absent in the 100% treatment. But what's really fascinating is that these differences persist through the season. So in August, when the crop has reached its the largest size, we still see these differences between the 50% and 100%, slightly deeper root system, and again a proliferation in the 40 to 60 centimeter, while for the 100%, many of the roots are up in the upper depths of the soil, making it more susceptible to dry periods and drought periods through the season. By October, we begin to see the senescence of the root system, but again, we see a much more persistent root system in the 50% than we do the 100%. So we're affecting soil moisture profiles, we're affecting the root architecture and rooting pattern of the system by these early drought stress treatments. We obviously should be affecting the physiology of the plants. And in this case, what we did was we concentrated on assimilation factors, which we knew would be correlated with yield. So I'm going to show you some photosynthetic rates. And in this case, we're looking in 2005 in two conditions, a dry condition, so 7 days after irrigation, and then a wet condition, 1 day after irrigation. And we're looking in early season in June and fairly late season in August. When you compare photosynthetic rates across these treatments to the average of the 100%, we see an upregulation actually in photosynthetic rates in our 75% treatment. And as we reach the later season, we see a maintenance of its photosynthetic rate quite equal to the 100%. So our deficit irrigation is functioning quite well in comparison to the 100%. Well, it appears that we may be actually affecting the physiological function, maybe perhaps acclimating the crop by applying these deficit irrigation treatments. What exactly does this acclimation response look like? So we looked at this a little more closely in 2006. Again, we have a wet condition, 1 day post-irrigation, a dry condition, 7 days after irrigation. When you look at the response across the season in photosynthetic rates for the 100%, we of course see an increase in mid-season as the crop has reached its maximum size and then a drop-off as the crop begins to senesce. When you compare that with a 50% treatment, we actually see an upregulation both in the wet and the dry condition above the 100%, but in a dry condition we begin to see that drop off, that significant effective stress in the 50%, so photosynthetic rates are dropping off mid-season, but then recovering late season. 75% treatment, however, we see a maintenance, the same upregulation of photosynthetic rates early and late season, and a maintenance of its photosynthetic rates in similar to the 100%. Well, what's happening to our early drought stress treatments? In this case, we're looking at the 50%, 100, 100. Again, we see this upregulation, but then we do not see the loss of photosynthetic rates in the dry condition mid-season. And an even more dramatic effect with the 75%, 100%, where we see a maximum rate of photosynthesis above the 100% using an early drought stress treatment of 75%. Now, of course, we see differences between the dry condition and the wet condition, but what I want to remind you is that in this system, this is a thermal stress signature of the field itself, the crop basically exists in a dry condition. So in this arid environment, it's really only existing in a wet, non-stressed condition for 1 day, and the rest of the time as this pivot makes its way across the field for the other 6 days, it's operating in this dry stress condition. There's also evidence that we may be changing the actual makeup of the canopy itself, and so we see through the use of chlorophyll fluorescence and NDVI that our early drought stress treatments, we've actually increased the efficiency of photosynthesis, and NDVI shows basically an increase in the overall health of the canopy up and above 100% and the other drought stress treatments. So we may actually be changing the makeup of that canopy itself. Well, so we're seeing a physiological acclimation to drought stress. Why would that be beneficial? How would that be adaptive to the crop itself? Turns out that this may be a method by which the crop is able to rush to reproduction or increase its reproductive output, and that would be a benefit to the crop. We did see evidence of this looking at cumulative flowering in our 100% treatment, 75 and 50%. We see across the early season irrigation, we see an increase in the number of flowers produced in our deficit irrigation treatments. And in fact, we see that maintained throughout the mid and late season as well. In the dotted lines here, these are our early drought stress treatments. We see a benefit to those stress treatments by increasing flowering. We also see those same benefits by an increase in peg production up above 100% level here. And we can see that the number of pods is maintained in our early drought stress treatments. And so that explains why we are seeing the yield maintenance within these deficit irrigated treatments. The next step is to try to understand what the genetic responses are. And so when we went and measured the physiological responses, simultaneously we collected that same tissue, and we're now conducting microarray analyses on that tissue to try and understand which genes are upregulated and downregulated in response to this acclimation phenomena. We're also looking at alternative management techniques. So we know that conservation tillage in the southeast is very effective at maintaining soil moisture and peanut production systems, but it's not utilized in the southwest. So we're combining these drought stress treatments, time to development, in combination with conservation till systems to see if we can provide another tool to growers to maintain economic viability. So with that, I'd like to thank Jimbo and Jeremy Grissom, who were the farmers that we worked with, and I think I have time for one question. Yes.
Have you measured if index?
Yes, we have, and I haven't shown that data, but we do have that.
But because I have my worries about what you call dimension, because several things you can observe changes in synthetic rate per centimeter square, but this is only a consequence of a compensation between leaf area size and the capacity per centimeter square. So how you can differentiate area acclimatization from what is a compensation between leaf size and capacity per centimeter square?
Well, we're measuring these the photosynthetic rates at leaf level, so those are standardized to leaf level. But when you look then at the yield production, which really is the bottom line, even though your canopies are smaller, you have a yield maintenance. And so in our case, that's what was important, that actually acclimation is in response to the yield maintenance within that treatment. So for us, that's what was important. Thank you very much.